It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 428. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number, 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request. And you can get access to all of the great past shows going all the way back to show number one. And you can find them at the wiki, mtswiki.com. Tonight, I want to talk about some of the things that I've been experiencing with consulting. And the first, it's going to be a series of tips that I want to share with you that were discovered when I was helping a listener. But this listener reached out to me for help in helping him with an exchange problem with a client. He's a consultant, contacted me. Last week, I was able to help him out. We connected online, and here's what we were able to accomplish. He inherited a server problem from a new client that has Exchange with Small Business Server 2008. So he has Exchange 2007, had horrible hardware problems. What they decided that there might have been some corruption in the Exchange database. So it was a Dell server, got all the hardware up. But now, for the first time, he's installing Exchange. And he's never installed Exchange by himself. And he had Small Business Server up and running. He needed to get Exchange installed. So he reached out to me with some emails. And I was so busy. We finally connected on Saturday, and I was able to help him out Saturday night. The first problem that we ran into, the Exchange install went pretty good, but the first problem we ran into was Outlook 2007, which is the client. He would launch Outlook 2007, and you were prompted for a name and a password. And if you are on an Active Directory network and you have logged in with the proper network credentials and you are connecting to an Exchange server, you should not be prompted to log in. It's automatic. Your network credentials are passed automatically to the Exchange server, and you should never be prompted with that. Now, I've seen this once before, and we started Googling, and we found this out, and this is after I went through all the Exchange settings to make sure everything's set up, made some recommendations I did for a couple things for making sure he had the latest Exchange service pack, and to get the service pack 3, which he was not at, you got to go through some steps for that. We had to correct this problem because this was big, and this is the first link, and it's Outlook 2007. Prompts you repeatedly for a password under certain network conditions. There's no real explanation here as to why it's happening, but it does. And under certain conditions, with a combination of your operating system, the version of Office, the version of Exchange, you can't connect properly. And they have this little hotfix. So you use Internet Explorer, and you on each workstation, we ran this hotfix, this automatic Microsoft fix right from this link, and it fixed it. I mean, automatically, We didn't even have to reboot. Right after we applied this fix, we connected right up and never were prompted again. And this solved all of his Outlook setting up to the Exchange. Now, he did something pretty clever for recovering from Exchange. Before they took down the server and found this intermittent hardware problem that they had to fix, he did have access to all the email from the client. What he did is dragged and dropped all of their email information to a local PST. Then he had everybody's email saved from the PST. Now, there's another way of doing that, and that's using the Exchange EX Merge utility, which sort of does the same thing. It goes against the Exchange email database and will extract everybody's email individually, and it will create separate PSTs. So you point to the Exchange database, and then there's a prompt to point to the location of where you want this information stored, and it will build the PSTs. After you rebuild a empty Exchange database, you can now use EXMerge to put the information back. Well, what he did is after building the Exchange server, upload it from the local PST and put all of their email back to the server. So he did it manually, what the EXMerge utility does, but he approached it with the proper way. If you have a corrupted database, the first thing you do is take Exchange offline and you copy and make a copy of your information stores and your public folders, private folders, your public folder information stores, so your mailbox information stores, and you may have a couple depending on the version, and your public folder information stores, you make sure you have a good copy of that. Now you can play with that. And there are utilities that will go in and try to repair the database, and you can run that. One of the first things you want to do is make sure to check the integrity of the database. So there's lots of things that you can run. There's some advanced utilities for Exchange that can help you. Don't be afraid to tackle some of these problems. There are some really good tips and good links here. We're going to talk about two more links that I've discussed in the past, because once we got Exchange up and running, that's not the end of the story. What about all of the cell phones out there? What about all their iPhones or Android phones that are connecting remotely? Since it's SBS, you must run the wizards. There are small business server wizards that you must run for email connection, internet connectivity. Just simple questions, but you got to run these wizards. And they set this connectivity all up. Now, to check the connectivity, we have a great site that I've discussed before, and it's called Remote Connectivity Analyzer. And it's how you can remote in and actually check off boxes. You give it an account, and it will test whether ActiveSync is set up properly. Great test. Then there was another test, which I used MX Toolbox. Now, you've heard me talk about MX Toolbox when I'm looking to see if someone's email server or their IP address is on a blacklist, or just to check the MX records, and that's mxtoolbox.com. Well, there's another button there that we've never talked about, and it's an SMTP test. It will quickly test whether you have the ports opened and everything's correct to be able to receive email. When I first connected with my new client here, that did not work remotely. So we had some networking work that had to be done. And there was something that he did. I think we connected on Friday night, discovered this, and then he went in on Saturday. And here's a tip. During the installation of this server and the setup of the networking, he unchecked the protocol for IPv version 6. Well, that messed everything up. Now, he didn't realize. He figured, well, I don't really need IP version 6 yet. Guess what? You do. Even if you're not using it, unchecking that causes other issues. It looked like things were working, but they were not. Once he checked that back, rebooted, the networking issues went away. So it was a series of a couple things, making sure DNS was configured correctly, making sure DHCP was configured correctly on the server, making sure all the network settings were set, then going into Exchange and making sure we check all of the Exchange settings, then tested email back and forth with one of his users. Perfect. Worked great. Everything was good. Happy, happy. And I was glad that he was able to take care of that. I encourage anybody that if you are in a situation like that and maybe in over your head or you got some problems, I can't solve anything, everything, but I will gladly work with you to try to solve it. And my consultant to consultant rates are very good. And you can always contact me and you can go to mhsconsulting.net to get all my contact information. And I'll call you. Just send me a phone number that I can talk to you. I will give you a call. We'll discuss it. And I'll let you know what my rate is and how, you know, let's see how serious everything is and what you may need for help. And I will gladly do everything I can to help you remotely. And I've been able to do that with several listeners who have contacted me for some consulting services, and I really appreciate that. And it's great, and I'll do my best to try to help you. This is what I do for a living, so why not leverage my show to help promote my consulting services? I don't do that a lot, but I wanted to give an example of this and how it really does work. This is a tip, and I'm not sure how popular this tip is out there. You know, the whole world, everybody that upgraded to ISO 6 is steaming because Apple really blew it with their Maps app, and they got rid of Google Maps. Well, here's a tip. Open up Safari, and when you open up Safari, I want you to go to Google. And in Safari, up at the top, when you go to Google's page on your iPhone, there is a Maps selection. Pick that Maps selection, and you're going to go to the web. Then it's going to ask you, do you want to use your location? You say, okay. And then you're going to get a little pop-up. Install this web app on your phone. Tap on the arrow, and then add to home screen. One click. And I now get an icon on my screen that is Google Maps. And it's the web version of Google Maps. And what you're able to do is just click on that and it will run the web version of Google Maps. So you don't have to download anything from the iPhone store, from, you know, the Apple App Store, and you get your Google Maps. Okay, is it going to be the full functioning of the Maps integrated into all the other iPhone functions? No, but it's a start and it can help you out. So if you're anguishing over not having Google Maps, this is a first start in helping you get it back a little bit. Red in the chat says, I use Waze, W-A-Z-E, on the iPhone navigation and it's free and works great. So that's a great tip, and I will add that to the show notes. So it's Waze, W-A-Z-E. Download that, and we got another navigation program for iOS 6. Thank you for that tip. Now, I received an email for a tip on a speed test, and I got a follow-up from that listener who said, thanks for playing my voicemail on the show, and I was wondering if you had time to try the speed test app, because he's in my area. And he says, if so, what kind of speeds are you getting on AT&T's LTE network? And I ran the speed test app. And what I'm doing when I shut off my Wi-Fi and then I run the test and I gave him results, my upload, the download is usually pretty good. The upload, very, very slow. I'm finding it very, very hard. And it's interesting that earlier today, I was getting 11 meg down consistently. Now I'm only getting 3. And the upload never goes above a meg. It's only like barely 1. So the upload speeds, very, very slow on my LTE network in my area. which is right outside Philadelphia. But pretty good download speeds. Now, tonight as I run the test live as I'm recording this show, not so good. For a lot of you who are listening to show 428, you're like, you didn't record this live. Well, I did. I recorded it a week ago. Thursday night, October 4th, I recorded two shows live. And show 427, hopefully posted on time over the weekend. And then 428, my goal, this show, is to get it posted on October 11th. And when I get it posted, I'm not going to do it live since it's all recorded and everything's done. So thank everybody for all the support for that and understanding as I'm traveling during the week. I wanted to make sure to get a show out. I think you're going to like this story, and it utilizes a lot of things culled and discussed on the Mike Tech Show. I have a client that purchased 10 laptops, and we need a way to quickly get everything installed that we want. They have some custom apps, and for 10, that's not that bad. So I had them hook up 5 laptops, and I put a little on their conference room table. I put a little small switch in the middle, and I did this afternoon, and we ran some Cat5s all back to the one port that they had in their conference room. They wanted to customize each laptop. They don't have experience with Windows 7. And these laptops are for people that are going to be remote, that don't work inside the office. So what I made sure is that they were able to quickly get connected to the network. And we went step by step on one workstation with 2 people in the office that are going to do this upgrade, because they didn't want me to do them all. And I understand they want to save some money. So I said, look, I'll train you to do how to do one. And we spent 4 hours, but they learned a lot, and we configured the laptop. And one of the greatest surprises for them was the introduction to Ninite and ninite.com, and how quickly we were able to pick Microsoft Security Essentials, Malwarebytes, because they're going to buy the pro version, installing Woot within the browser for Internet Explorer, being able to update Flash, Java, put 7-zip, put TrueCrypt, because I had to instruct them how to encrypt all of the whole hard drive. Now, something very interesting here that happened, and I've never seen this. It's the first time this has happened. They did not get burners on their laptop to save money. They just got, it's a DVD CD reader. It's not a burner. And when you are using TrueCrypt to do a whole disk encryption on a hard drive, you have to build what they call an encryption recovery CD. You have to. It won't let you not do it when you're doing whole disk encryption. And I've never been on a machine doing whole disk encryption where there was no burner on the laptop. I can't believe this. And now I put the CD in. I said, well, maybe it's just a CD burner, not a DVD burner. And I put a blank CD in when it's at that prompt where it wants to create that. And guess what it does? It sits and it comes back at a screen and it creates an ISO in the local document directory for the user. Okay, this is great. Take the ISO. I copy it up on the server. They do have a burner right next to us in one of the assistant's offices. She goes in and I show her how to burn that ISO. We bring it back right in the middle where it wants to test the CD, because now it said, okay, I created an ISO and put it here. There was no other option. And I was like, uh-oh, it wants a CD. It really wants that. So we got to burn. They're getting an external DVD burner, which for under $30, you can have a USB DVD burner. And I said, you know, it's worth just having one around. And I didn't have mine with me, which was shocking because it was not in my car. It wasn't in my bag. And I looked in a couple bags in my car and it was like, I don't know where it is now. I got to find it. And hopefully I didn't leave it at a client, which I probably did connect it to some server. So I have to find my little portable burner that I always carry with me. I would have had that instant solution. But since it creates this ISO, it allows you to at least go to another place, burn it. And then, I mean, you could always copy that to a USB and then go burn it. Now, I've been working with TrueCrypt a lot, and I never ran into this. This was the solution, and it worked. Now, they can do this for the other 9 workstations or use an external burner, and they're not going to have any problem. But I didn't want to be stopped, and I needed to continue with going through the process. And then this was our last step, which was letting the drive, and this is how we left for the night, letting the drive configure, you know, for do the whole disk encryption, because it does a test where you reboot the system and it comes up where you got to enter the password that you selected for the encryption. The hard drive will not load the operating system until you enter the correct password for the encryption. I use this for many clients as a form of compliance. Maybe they're a financial organization or medical. There's lots of reasons why you want to have a laptop. And if that laptop is lost, stolen, something happens, if it gets into the wrong hands, you want to make sure that nobody can get to that data. And TrueCrypt is a great free program that you've heard me talk about a lot that can encrypt an entire hard drive, maybe an external USB stick, and it can protect you, protect your client. And it's something that's very, very important. Making sure you are compliant with whatever compliance that your industry that you're helping has to deal with. And there's lots of alphabet soups of compliance, whether it's Sarbanes-Oxley, HIPAA, FINRA. There's lots of them. Matter of fact, on the back of my business card, I have those alphabets listed in one line saying to assist with compliance on blah, 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 blah. It's important to PCI compliance. That's another one that's very important for the credit card industry. I've helped lots of little businesses get compliant. I've did a whole show talking about that. Encryption is just one of those steps. This week has just been crazy busy. My son Tyler was off on Tuesday from his work. He works part-time, and he was able to help me deliver and install 4 systems to a brand new office. And when I got down there, and this is becoming more common, I have another client that when I get back from being away, that whole week that I'm back, I'm literally booked every day. I have another new client that not only am I installing a peer server with enough storage that they can all save everything locally, but multiple routers to separate, physically separate the networks, and having a router that is dedicated to a private network for the company and a router dedicated to the public network. So let's say it's ABC company. So I'll have an ABC private and ABC public. Now, I know there's routers that you can do both. I like the physical separation. I'd rather have 2 inexpensive routers than 1 big one that can do all that. And right now, that's been working great. And it's a great way to separate all of the public networking versus the private that lots of clients now want to be able to offer. Maybe it's for their employees to just be able to use Wi-Fi on their iPhones, but they don't want that on their regular network. And that's a great little value add for employees so they don't chew up their data network when they're in the office. Because I'm running into this right now. I got a phone call today from a longtime client that never needed Wi-Fi, but now everybody's got iPhones and Androids. And he says, Mike, man, they want to save using the Wi-Fi. So I was like, okay, you know what? I said, we have a router, but we turned off the wireless. I said, I'll just remote in and we'll turn it on. Let's pick a password. Let's pick a SID that you want that you want built out. That's why it's important. If you're doing this for a living, or even part-time, if you're supporting people, have plenty of routers. Have a high-end, have a low-end. I like the Media Link for my main router, and then some low-end neck gears for some other work. If you look in my car, look in my house, there's always two or three routers around, and I am constantly turning them over. Always, always. As a matter of fact, something I ran out of and I had to buy a bunch of is surge strips. That's something I run into all the time, is surge strips for clients that are hooking a whole bunch of computers. I'm also finding lots of little things that I got to constantly reorder. I'm now like wiped out of network cables, so I have to keep buying network cables. And surge suppressors I leave behind all the time because I'm installing systems and they don't have surge suppressors. So I went on Amazon, bought a bunch of surge strips, you know, some cheap ones and some better ones, so I can have them to use. Have all of these little spare parts just to have them. It really helps. Like those power liberators. And if you don't know what that is, I'm going to have a link to it. It's a must buy. It's a little add-on that you can just, little adapter that you can put on a surge strip. So those big transformers, they can plug in and they don't take up two. And it also has one that you can put a power, something that, a power cord on top of. So it makes one outlet act as two and gives you room to hook up something big. These little things make a big difference when you're working with a client and you pull them out to help in a situation. It's awesome. It's going to give you so many brownie points with that client. You can't measure that by having all of those little adapters. Because what I got to do is I got to make the time after I use them. And hey, I add them to the bill. Some of those little things are good little money makers. Like I always said, network cables, you know, is a great way to add value to the client, save them money, and you make money. That we have lots of sources that we always talk about for network cables. You know, I like MonoPrice. And of course, you know, Amazon. And while we're on the subject of Amazon, use my link, amazon.micnation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon link and helping support the show. I really appreciate it so much. All of your generosity and support, like Fab's Auto Backup for Tech, which I used again today. I use that every day. Malwarebytes Pro. These are affiliates that of products that I believe in, I use all the time, and I highly recommend. And I want to thank everybody for supporting all of that. And I hope it helps you with your clients and your own personal use and your systems and friends and people you come in contact with, so we can solve all these problems together and do it inexpensively and become productive. And that's what this is all about. So thank you very much, and I will see you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.